So, today I would like to begin with a bit of a detour in order to motivate the GSO projection, which is a topic which can be understood in a more modern way than it is explained in textbook. So, a lot of the choices that are made in the GSO projection look a little bit strange or unmotivated until you think about it in a more modern way in terms of gauging discrete symmetries and anomalies. So I would like to just discuss a little bit what does it mean to present a two-dimensional conformal field theory or a two-dimensional theory or a theory in general. So I assume you've seen something like the Ising model. And you might have also seen that the Ising model can be solved by transforming to free fermions, or that has the relations with free fermions. You might have also seen another statement, some relation between Ising to the Ising and free fermions. You might also encounter Kammerer-Vanier duality, the high temperature, low temperature duality, or the Ising model. And perhaps even the fact that this duality, from the point of view of the free fermions, is just a pretty simple reorganization of the degrees of freedom. Now, if those discussions left you with the impression that the Ising model is the same as a theory of a free fermion, or that this duality is really a symmetry, then you're left with the wrong impression. These statements are often presented as identifications, but that's not the case. They're definitely relations, but these three theories are distinct. In particular, which operators do you find in the 2D Ising model? Well, you find identity, epsilon, the energy, a density on the lattice, okay, and sigma, the spin operator on the lattice, and their descendants under Virasoro. In the what sort of operators do you find in a theory of free fermions? Can you tell me some local operators in the theory of free fermions? Come on, if you have a quantum field theory of free fermions, psi and psi bar, with some action, psi, del bar psi, plus psi bar, del psi bar, what are examples of local operators? What's a local operator you always have in a quantum field theory when you quantize a classical field theory? Did you say?
Mass.
No, I'm not asking about parameters. I'm asking about local operators.
They are bar psi.
Ah, okay, yes, of course. But also you have psi. So you have identity, psi and psi bar. And then indeed you have psi bar psi. And maybe psi de psi. And so on. You know, psi, psi bar, del psi, whatever. If you collect primaries for under Virasoro, you just need to mention one psi and psi bar. Well, all and also psi psi bar. Everybody else is a descendant. Now, what are the properties of these operators? Here, these operators have conformal dimensions, scaling dimensions 0, 0. 1/2, 1/2. So scaling dimension 1 and spin 0. And 1/16, 1/16. So scaling dimension 1/8 and spin 0. On the other hand, in the theory of free fermions, this guy have spin. This has dimension 1/2, 0, and this 0, 1/2. And this 1/2, 1/2. Notice that because your theory of free fermions have operators of which are spinners, which have half integral spin, you cannot define it on a generic Riemann surface. Without making extra choices. Why? Because of the coordinate transformations, because the fermion transforms under coordinate transformation with a square root. Of the Jacobian. So if you want to define it on a Riemann surface, you have to tell me what is the square root of the Jacobian for every pair of patches. It's not obvious that you can do so consistently everywhere. It's a non-trivial theorem that you can always do it on a Riemann surface. It's also not obvious that there is a unique choice. Indeed, there isn't. This choice of square roots is called a spin structure, and in a general Riemann surface, there are plenty of spin structures. So this is, while this is a true CFT, a true quantum field theory can be defined on a manifold given a metric, this is something called a spin CFT. It cannot be defined on a general manifold unless you specify the spin structure. Translated to do string theory, we'll always need to use CFTs on the worksheet. If you try to use a spin CFT, when you sum over all possible configurations of the worksheet, implicitly you project it back to a CFT. So when I told you yesterday that we were going to use a theory of free fermions, bosons, fermions, and BCCs, BC ghosts and beta gamma ghosts, I was subtly lying because a theory of free fermions, BC and beta gammas would be a spin CFT. I need to do something to it to go to a CFT. This is what the JSO projection is about. But let's stay here for now. So if I compare these different theories, which operators do they have in, what do they have in common? Look at the list of operators. What do they have in common? Give a suggestion. The identity operator is in common. All three theories. Is there anything else in the list which has similar properties? That's right. So epsilon in the Eisenhower model is identified with psi psi bar in the theory of free fermion. The epsilon in the other Eisenhower model is also the same, I'll pop the sign. Right? Hermite duality switches the sign of the mass term, switches the sign of epsilon. So when I say these operators are the same, I really mean correlation functions of these operators are the same. So if you take any correlation function of this theory, which only involves 1 and epsilon, is identical to the same correlation function in the free fermion theory on the plane. When we go on the Riemann surface, things become more interesting. But on the plane or on a sphere, the statement is correct. But other operators definitely do not match, right? This local operator here cannot be found here as a local operator. Psi and psi bar cannot be found here as a local operator. So there is sort of a... So now let's ask ourselves, what prevented us from defining a theory which only had these operators? Why do I need sigma? What goes wrong if I try to define a theory which only has 1 and epsilon? How do you know if you've included in a theory all local operators? So it's a subtle question. In 2D, there is this way to understand it, which unfortunately does not generalize higher dimension. So suppose I give you some collection of operators. Now, there is a state operator map, so I can convert this collection of operators into some Hilbert space for the theory on a circle, for the theory on a cylinder. Then I can go from this, I can make the cylinder into a torus. Simply by gluing the past and the future together. If you want, taking this Hilbert space, propagating for a while, and then gluing. So doing a calculation like trace on the Hilbert space of something like e to the minus, let me just write it as L times the Hamiltonian. You can be more precise than that. You might have already seen something better, but let me just leave it at that. You can do this calculation. But now, because it's a conformal field theory, there is really no distinction between the different cycles on the torus. I could take this answer and try to cut it in a different way. So take the same answer and try to interpret it as a trace on the Hilbert space on this line. Now I take this line and I evolve it in this direction. Now, when you look at this expression and you convert it into something like this, it will look like a trace in some other Hilbert space. Turns out that it looks something like that. I should probably put some 2π to make this statement really true. Simply because if you have a cylinder, if you have a torus with this circle that has canonical length 2π and this one had 2πL, I can always do a wild transformation which makes this 2π and this 2π over L. That's free scaling by L. So I get a new Hilbert space. And it turns out it's typical. If this was not a full collection of local operators, this Hilbert space is not the same as this. Bigger or different. I can actually get different answers depending on if I cut it like this or if I cut it along a line that goes spiraling around. And so this Hilbert space now gives me, by the state operator map, a new set of potential local operators that I could use. Now, if I look at the original collection of local operators, which properties do I want local operators to satisfy? Well, in order for my correlation functions to be well-defined, local operators should be mutually local. Meaning if I take this operator and this other operator and I carry these around, I should go back to the original place because a correlation function should depend only on the positions of the operator, not on the history of how I brought those operators to that position. Sorry, my calculation. So when I look at this new collection of local operators, of candidate operators, some of them are not going to be local with the old, with each other or with the old ones. But I can at least restrict myself to the ones that are local with the old ones.
The third arrow, when you go from cutting like this to cutting like this,
yes,
you're doing the same thing as from going from canonical quantization to radial quantization.
It's, I don't know if I, is it fair to say that? I'm not sure that it's similar in nature, but I'm just cutting the manifold in a different way. I'm just, more precisely, I'm exchanging the role of Euclidean time and space. That's probably the best way to say it. Here I decided that this direction was Euclidean time and this was space. But I could have done the opposite choice. And the opposite choice gives me a different interpretation. Now, I'm not saying these operations are obvious. It takes some effort to go from the partition function to understanding what are the properties of this new operator. Okay. None of these steps is immediate, but these are conceptually possible steps. Similarly, you could now, another thing that you can say, suppose you want to consider this collection of operators plus some new operator. Then automatically I had to also consider all the operators which come from fusing the new operator with the old operator by doing OP. So I can decompose this collection of new operators into representations or modules for the old operator algebra. So these are collections of operators which fuse into each other by fusing them with this, with old operator, which are mapped into each other by fusing with the old operator. So now, in order to define a good theory, what do I have to do? I have to try to enlarge the old collection of operator with some set of these modules to try to produce a complete theory. A theory with the property that no matter how I cut my correlation functions, I get the same Hilbert space. Okay. And this sometimes cannot be done. Sometimes it can be done in a unique way, but sometimes it can be done in multiple ways. So this is an example of a situation in which you can do it in multiple ways. If you give me the operators 1 and epsilon together with all their correlation functions, you can extend this collection in 3 different ways. There are 3 natural modules for a collection of 1 and epsilon. So here the operators are 1, epsilon, and descendants. And then the modules are sigma and descendants for Ising, the one that you'll add to make Ising. The one you'll add to make fermions consists of psi bar, and descendants. And the one, see, for example, if you take psi and do OP with psi bar, you can get psi bar. So they're in the same module. Then if you fuse sigma with 1 or epsilon, you always get back sigma. And the third Ising model, the second Ising model, the Kramer-Vanier dual Ising model, has another version of the spin operator, which is not the same as the original one. Let me call it mu. And its descendants. You can only add one of these because they're not mutually local. You try to put a sigma and a psi in a same correlation function, you get flip signs that flip when you carry them around each other, and so on. Now, we can be a bit more precise about that. So both these three teams theories have symmetries. This theory has a symmetry minus 1 to the f, which sends psi to minus psi and psi bar to minus psi bar. This symmetry is the Ising symmetry. It sends sigma to minus sigma. And this alternative version of Ising has, again, an Ising symmetry which sends mu to minus mu. So the common set of operators are the operators which are neutral under this symmetry. The operators we are adding and removing are the ones that are odd under this symmetry. Now, this is not always the case. I mean, this sort of general structure holds in a lot of examples without having an underlying symmetry to govern it. But in a lot of cases, there are this symmetry. Vice versa, whenever you have a symmetry, you can ask yourself, could I possibly throw away the odd operators and bring in a new set of operators to define a variant of the theory? This operator is called orbit. This operation on theories is called orbitfold, or gauging a discrete symmetry. As any form of gauging symmetries, there can be obstructions. So it's possible that once I throw away my odd operators, I cannot find a new set of operators to bring in. So denoted by saying that this symmetry is anomalous. Or when I gauge it, when I do this operation, I might be able to do it in multiple ways. That's actually always the case. So somehow the different ways you can do these operations are universal in nature. So every theory with Z2 symmetry in two dimensions, which is not anomalous, will be in relation with other theories in the same way as the Ising model. So there will be another theory obtained by adding some operators of spin zero or integral spin, which here happens to be, again, the Ising model. So one of the ways of orbit folding will give you always a CFT. And the other way will always give you a spin CFT, which here happens to be the free fermion. Conversely, OK, let me leave it at that. So now, if you want to recall, to figure out what this sigma and mu are from the point of view of the free fermion, warp size from the point of view of the Ising model, you can consider twisted sector, twist operator. So in the fermionic theory, you could ask yourself, what happens if I consider an operator around which my fermions switch sign, going around which my fermions switch side? So this is not a local operator because it's doing something non-local, but it's doing something very controllable. I can consider correlation functions to the fermions, where the fermions switch sign when they go across some cuts. When I do that, I will find that there are actually two possible local operators here, which I can identify with sigma and mu. So somehow fusing the fermion with sigma maps it to mu, and fusing with mu maps it to sigma. We will see in great details the properties of these sectors momentarily. And you'll see that the fermion has a zero mode. The fermion has some zero mode, and the zero mode maps the state corresponding to sigma to the state corresponding to mu and back. Pretty much as we saw happening for the BC ghost, where there are some ground states related by action of C0 and B0. This is analogous. Except that in that case, those ground states had no cut because the BC system had zero mode without a cut. Anyway, we'll get there. But now I just wanted to say that here is how you discover that there are sigma and mu in the theory of the fermion. When you throw away the operators of fermion number, odd fermion number, this cut disappears because you threw away all the operators which see the cut. And the endpoints have the chance to become local operator. But the point is that sigma and mu are not local with each other. And so you can include only one of them in the theory. Similarly, in the Ising model, you can put a line across which sigma goes to minus sigma. And you discover that this line has two kinds of endpoints, three kinds of endpoints, actually, which are psi, psi bar, and mu. And same here. The line across which mu goes to minus mu can end on semi-local operators with the same properties as psi bar. Okay. So now you know a lot more about orbifolds and engaging discrete symmetry. Now, you could have asked yourself, could have I used a symmetry which only switches the sign of psi, but leave psi bar unchanged? This is definitely a symmetry of the free fermion theory. Could have I gauged it? Could have I projected away states operators with a non-odd number of psi's and any number of psi and kept operators with even number of psi's and any number of psi bar? Well, this is an example of a symmetry with an anomaly. So this cannot be done. So if you try to do so, somehow the twist fields which live at the end of a cut for this symmetry have bad properties that prevent them from being treated as local operators. But the anomaly, as I explained before, anomalies are classified by some numbers, right? And they can be canceled by piling up a bunch of theories. For example, we had the Weyl anomaly for one scalar field, which was one. We saw that if we pile up 26 scalar fields and one set of ghosts, the anomaly cancels and Weyl symmetry is restored. It turns out that the anomalies for Z2 symmetries in fermionic theories are defined mod 8. They're valued in Z8. Which means if you have a theory of 8 free fermions, then you could indeed gauge this sort of chiral symmetry. It turns out that you can actually also do so if you have 10 free fermions and a set of beta gamma ghosts, as long as this symmetry acts on the beta gamma and not beta bar gamma bar. So just by a miracle, in exactly the critical dimension of superstrings, you can have this extra option of gauging both minus one to the left and minus one to the right. So you get more options. So when we define our string theories, right, we'll have a variety of choices, because we're going to start from this theory of 10 X's, 10 size, B, C, beta gamma, C bar, 10 psi bars, C, beta gamma, B, C bar, beta bar, gamma bar. This is a spin CFT. And then we are going to throw away some things and add in others, find good CFTs. And we'll be able to do it in a variety of ways. If we only use minus one to the F, then we'll land on pretty much two possibilities, up to obvious identifications like Ising and Ising are the same theory, which are called 0A and 0B. But if we instead gauge both minus one to the F left and minus one to the F right in different ways, then we'll be able to land on other two theories called type 2A and type 2B. And it turns out that so these theories are very similar to the bosonic string. They have no space-time fermions, and they have a tachyon. But these two theories have space-time fermions and have not happened. So these are good. And then there is a variant called the theoretic string, as I mentioned, where I consider where I keep my supersymmetry only live on the chiral side. So I have psi's. I have B, C, B bar, and C bar. I have beta gamma, but I don't have psi bars, and I don't have beta bar, and I don't have gamma bar. Now, if I try to start to use this theory, I get a bit in trouble because the critical dimension for the supersymmetric side is 10, and the one of the anti-super for the chiral side, then yeah, supersymmetric was fine. And the one on the non-chiral side was 26. So to make things work, you sort of need to add something else to balance out things. It turns out that something like 16 extra fermions do the job. And then you get to do a variety of GSO projections. There are many, many choices. Half of them have tachyons, but a handful does not. So there is something called SO32, a theoretic string, which is nice. It's something called the E8 times E8, a theoretic string. And then there is something called SO16, and it's SO16, theoretic string. And the others are tachyonic. So all of these theories are sort of built on the same underlying fermionic theory by throwing away some operators of anti-Archytetra spin and then bringing in a variety of alternatives to make a complete theory. And now we're gonna discuss these two in greater detail between today and tomorrow. Mm-hmm.
The fermions that you add, the 16 fermions, are they holomorphic? Holomorphic?
They're just holomorphic, so they make up for the missing psi bars and beta bar and gamma bar. Remember, the beta gamma had, sorry, bar, the anti-holomorphic. So see. And actually, sorry, I said 16, but I wanted to say 32. I wanted to say that it was something with central charge 16, the simplest thing you can do. Sorry, what was the question?
What about the type 1 superstring?
Right, then there are other possibilities, but those are just theories where you include. So these are just closed string theories. Now, on top of these, you can put D-brains. And another thing called orbit folds or orient folds. There are other modifications. So when you have, in order to add D-brains, you consider surfaces with holes. In order to do other things like orient folds, you consider word sheets which are non-orientable, meaning that sometimes you can exchange left movers and right movers as you go around some path. So you can try to do these modifications in a way that is space filling, so you don't see some extra object there. Like you can use D9 brains. And so those look like, you know, so those are theories of open and closed strings which propagate everywhere in space time. They're called type 1. So there are modifications of type 2B. One more modern perspective. So there are space filling modifications of type 2B. And hopefully tomorrow we'll discuss briefly which D-brains exist for type 2A and type 2B, which will help understand this state. Okay, now, how do we proceed? Any more questions? These things are pretty fun. And they've been explored properly only very recently. Because they are important in condensed matter physics. The fact that the anomaly of gauging Z2 symmetry is universal and valid in mod 8 is a pretty recent statement, for example. But of course, people had done GSO projection before, just by hand, without understanding in detail the anomaly interpretation. Okay, so let's go back and study a free fermion. Psi bar. And let's do all our usual exercises. So let's quantize it on a cylinder. Actually pretty similar to the quantization of the BC system, because the action is again psi del bar psi. So for example, cutting a few corners, your psi will have an expansion of this sort. M psi bar. But there is an important subtlety, which comes from the square root. See, when you do the state operator map, the Jacobian is e to the s. So fermions on the plane and fermions on a cylinder are related by a multiplication of by square root of e to the s. That means that if a fermion that calculation where a fermion was periodic on the plane becomes a calculation where your fermion is antiperiodic on the cylinder and vice versa. So if you want to study local operators, right, they will correspond to they will be in relation with states on the cylinder where the fermion is antiperiodic. On the other hand, if you study states where the fermion is periodic, you're secretly studying local operators, which are twist fields, pseudo-local operators. So in particular, so the operators, the states which go to standard operators are called an S sector. Now, furthermore, you can make this choice both for psi and for psi bar. So you'll talk about NS sector, NSR. So the two choices for psi alone, I'm sorry, I want to say it this way. Let me ignore psi bar for a moment and just look at psi. We'll put psi bar back later. Okay? Now, then I have two possible choices. The one that corresponds to local operators in the bulk, in the plane, have a sum over half integral value. the one that corresponds to Swiss fields in the plane and periodic boundary conditions on the cylinder will have standard integral quantization. So the algebra of modes is always the same. It's psi n, psi m, the commutator equals delta n plus m, 0. But here, that means that I have things like psi to the 1/2, psi to the minus 1/2, and the commutator 1. I'll have some ground state in the NS sector, and on top of it, I'll build new states by acting with modes of negative index, and so on and so forth. On the other hand, in the Ramon sector, I will have surely modes like psi 1, psi minus 1, which behave as standard creation of destruction operator. But then I'll have a zero mode, a single fermionic zero mode, a single Majorana mode. So I have some Ramon states on which I'll act with creation operator. But I have to decide how psi zero acts on this ground state. Ground states will have to be a module for the zero mode. So if I put back psi bar, psi m psi bar, okay. So the specific properties of these states will depend sensitively on the number of fermions that I have included in the theory. This makes sense because these are twisted sectors. And as I said, there are all sorts of potential anomalies that can prevent you from defining well-defined twisted sectors. In the context of the Ising model, my Ramon sector, it turns out that I have two Ramon sector states. Call it sigma and mu, which are a module for the Clifford algebra of zero modes of psi and psi bar. So I have psi zero squared equal to one, psi zero bar squared equal to one, the anti-commute. And so they have a natural representation where psi zero maps a state into the other, and psi zero bar maps it back. Now, if I have a whole bunch of fermions, though, like here, then I need to keep track of all of them. So if I just focus on the zero mode of the holomorphic fermions, then a Ramon state must be acted upon by this 10 zero mode, which satisfy a Clifford algebra, like just like we saw for the fermionic particle. In particular, these have to be spinors. Of SO 9,1. Now here one should really take a detour to explain spinors in various dimensions. In how many dimensions have you encountered spinors until now? 4. The property of spinors depends somewhat sensitively on the number of dimensions you are in. In some dimensions you have, so in even dimension, you have chiral spinor. And you can make a gamma to t plus 1, multiplying all the gamma matrices you have, like gamma 5 in 4 dimension. And you can have chiral spinors, which have, again, value 1 or minus 1 under this gamma t plus 1. In odd dimension, instead, there is only one spindle representation. Then, depending on your specific dimension, these representations can be you might be able or not to have real spinner, like Majorana spinner, or complex spinner, and so on. Now, in SO 9.1 dimensions, you can have Majorana chiral spinner. So wild Majorana wild spinner, spinners which are chiral and also real, the reality condition. So there are two representations, and we call them. There are spinners of left and right chiralities. So let me denote an index like this as a Majorana wild with positive chirality, and let me denote with the dotted index spinner with negative chirality. So that means that our Ramon sector will consist of two. Now remember that the Clifford algebra representation includes both chiralities. So gamma matrices map spinors of one chirality to spinor of the other chirality, because they anti-commute with gamma d plus one. So in four dimensions, gamma matrices have one normal and one dotted in. So we'll have generically an A and A dot map into each other by the zero modes. When you include psi's and psi bar, then you'll have so it will have various possibilities. There will be an S and S sector, which has just one vacuum. There will be an NSR sector, which has an A on I dot which are acted upon by psi zero bar. There will be an RNS sector, where again we have something like A on a dot, acted upon by psi zeros. And then there will be Ramon sector, which has four possibilities, with something like AB, AB dot, A dot B, and A dot B dot. Acted, mapped into each other by zero modes of psi and psi bar. These are all the possibilities. Among this plethora of possible operators, pseudo-local operators, analogous to this OP, M1, M2, M3, we have to select mutually local things. Now, if we go back to the Ising model, one way to think about the selection between sigma and mu is that when you define minus 1 to the F, you have a certain degree of freedom in deciding who has positive and who has negative Fermat number. Of course, they have to have opposite Fermat number because they are mapped into each other by psi. So one way to think about the projection from free fermions to Ising is to say, okay, I decided sigma had Fermat number zero, and so I kept it. Or here I decided that mu has Fermat number zero. So part of our choices will be understood just by saying, well, I got to decide if A or A dot has Fermat number zero, or for the left or for the right mover. Okay. Now, I did the discussion for the psi's. I should, in principle, also do a discussion for the betas and gammas, DOSTs and beta bar, gamma bar. I will not do so, but it's important to remember that when I say Ramon sector, it's also Ramon sector for the beta, gamma, beta bar, gamma bar. They don't sort of contribute to extra multiplicity, but they shift other properties of the states. A very important observation is that the ground state in the NS sector for the beta gamma system has fermion numbers minus one. So this is absolutely crucial. And it's fixed, it's not a choice. See, it's similar to what happens for the Gauss. For the BC Gauss, right, there is the state we call zero, the vacuum, which is mapped by the state operator map to the identity operator. The identity operator clearly has the Fermi number zero, which means that the ground state was obtained by the vacuum by acting with C minus one, with C one, C minus one, C one, and C one bar. In a similar manner, the ground state for the beta gamma system is not the same as the vacuum for the beta gamma. The vacuum has to have Fermi number zero, the state corresponding to the vacuum. And so this ground state and is obtained from the vacuum by acting with some modes, and it ends up having a non-trivial Fermi number. The non-trivial quantum number under this symmetry is minus one to the f minus one to the f bar. Why is this important? It's important because it means that the state, this sort of ground state is what gave rise to the tachyon in bosonic spring. The naked ground state without, ground state times momentum. Right. This was what gave rise to the tachyon in bosonic spring. When we look at type zero theories, where you're just projecting away based on minus one to the f, we'll keep it. Because minus one to the, sorry, this was f left and f right. So minus one to the f is minus one to the f left plus f right. And it's one. But in type two theories, we'll project it out. So there will be no tack. On the other hand, more interesting things like psi mu minus 1/2, psi mu above mu minus 1/2. This was just in the NS sector. Well, these states will have minus 1 to the f equal to 1, minus 1 to the f bar equal to 1, and they'll survive. And you see, this will give you things with two indices. You get things like graviton, B field, and dilaton. So type 2 A and type 2 B will keep the states we like, the ones that give us graviton. But they'll throw away the states we don't like. Another difference between type 2A, type 2 and type 0 is that type 0 only has twisted sectors under minus both minus 1 to the f. So they correspond to fields which have two spinor indices. And so they're not spinors, they're vector forms, things like that. On the other hand, in type 2, will have states that come from NSR or RNS sector and have one spinor index. And so we'll have spinors in space-time. And in particular, there will be something of the rough form psi minus 1/2 mu acting on an NSR state, which will have one vector and one spinor index and will turn out massless, and it will be a gravitino. So type two theories will end up having gravitons and gravitinos. And so there will be theories of supergravity. Okay. So tomorrow we will carefully distinguish the various possibilities, figure out which kind of supergravity theory we get for type 2a and type 2b. Maybe I'll say a few words about the heterotic string and about duality, brains and duality. Any more questions? Okay.